Previously on Algoa FM.
Women's Day 2024, we celebrate, we honour the memory of those powerful women who shaped the history of South Africa. But often we end up in the kind of chat where we go, let's appreciate the women who are doing things now. That has its place and it is an incredibly important part of celebrating Women's Day. But today, we're going to go back to the history of the women who fought for the cause of freedom in South Africa. I have a multifaceted guest today who's been in virtually every aspect from the freedom struggle right through to post-freedom, as it were, South Africa. Marion Sparg, you're an activist. They'll call you an activist, but to be active in the apartheid era as an activist was a little bit different to standing with a placard today. Where did it start for you?
I think it probably started in my first year of university at Rhodes University, where I had registered for a journalism degree. 1977, of course, was the year in which Mbita was killed in detention. It was a huge issue in the Eastern Cape, as I'm sure you're aware. The newspaper Daily Dispatch and the editor, Donald Woods, at the time, giving extraordinary attention and publicity to the event. My awareness began to go from that point on, particularly when I was able to observe the reactions of many of my fellow students at Rhodes, which was quite horrific at times in terms of their willingness, I suppose, to tolerate atrocities as long as it fitted in with their notion of what kept them safe and secure.
So then from observing these things, as many people must have, many people at the time were seeing these things going, this shouldn't be. And as a white student, you wouldn't have been affected so directly. Where do you go from journalism student who's at Rhodes, who's observing these things, to going, I have to get involved? And then it leads to Angola, the journey.
Yeah, the path from becoming conscious of what was happening around me to actually actively getting involved started with journalism. After graduating from Rhodes University, my first journalism job was in East London at the Daily Dispatch, where I was a sub-editor. And in my first couple of months there, the so-called Silverton siege took place in Pretoria. Some MK cadres had taken up refuge, I suppose, if one could call it that, in the Volkskrant Bank and ended up all being shot to death in the police action that followed. And then 1980-81, I moved on to the Sunday Times, where I was a reporter. I got to know people like Bishop Tutu, Alan Busack, Bayez Nadir, and many other leaders. I was fortunate that I was given quite a wide brief by the news editor at the time, Hans Stradel. And I suppose from observing those events, but also just experiencing the frustrations of journalism at the time, I just increasingly felt that I couldn't just sit and write about it, that I had to become involved. Black journalists at the time, for example, were on the biggest strike that had taken place up to that point. And none of the white journalists seemed to be prepared to take any action. A small group of us, rather junior white journalists, decided to stage a one-day protest to demonstrate solidarity with our black colleagues. And I found myself almost fired for what I regarded as rather a small gesture. And I think that, together with the all-arising protest in the country around the Anti-Republic Day celebrations, which were being planned by the apartheid regime at the time, all sort of culminated in myself and a couple of other colleagues deciding, not a very wise choice in hindsight, but we were frustrated with the Progressive Federal Party, which made out that it was opposed to apartheid and so on, but simply couldn't find its way towards supporting the anti-apartheid day protests, which were really widely supported by not just trade unions and black organizations, etc., but a number of liberal white organizations like the Black Slash and so on. The PFP decided that they were not going to join that protest. These two colleagues and myself decided that we were going to petrol bomb three PFP offices. And yeah, shortly with the petrol bombing, we went ahead with that. Was on, I think, the eve of the Republic Day itself, the 21st of May. And then before I really knew what was happening. I found myself in exile with the ANC and onto the camps in Angola.
So it starts with something's got to be done. I'll do something small, to this escalation where it's like, all right, we're going to do this big gesture, and one thing leads to another. And you find yourself in Angola, part of Mkhonto we Sizwe, often as one of the only or the only women in these training camps, to being a part of a special operations unit. I mean, that's just an incredible gear shift.
Yes, I suppose it is, but it was really my experience in the camps. I trained in two camps in Angola, and it was that first experience where I first realized that, you know, the people who were in command of the camps, who were my trainers, etc., were the similar generation of mine. They had left South Africa in the wake of the 1976 uprising, and it was that experience in those camps. I was the only white person in the camp, and at most of the time, I'm the only woman as well. And it was the kind of reception I got there, then later becoming aware of the price that many of those that I had trained with had paid. For example, who was the raid in Lesotho in 1982. And that was really the thing, the spark that made me go back to the commanders of MK that I was dealing with at the time and ask to be declared inside the country. Up to that point, I was deployed in the SACA to work with the ANC, Department of Information and Publicity. But after that Lesotho raid, I felt that it was important that as a white member, one of the very few white members of MK, we're prepared to make the same kind of sacrifices as anybody else.
Well, speaking of those, I mean, among the names, there are so many that you came into close contact with, was Chris Harney as well.
First met Chris Harney in Lusaka after I'd completed my initial training in 82 and sort of remained in touch with him. He was, throughout until I finally was deployed to Lesotho in 1985. He was more involved in my second training before I was deployed to the Special Operations Unit. Really, really inspiring individual.
Fortunately, you've documented your journey because, I mean, literally, we've just been chatting for a few minutes and I could ask you 100 more questions and I'm sure you could tell 1,000 more stories. But you've written a book. It's called Guilty and Proud, an MK Soldier's Memoir of Exile, Prison, and Freedom. How interesting is it that you went from that side of it, where virtually being the one that the law was targeting, to eventually, after 1994, working with the National Prosecuting Authority?
I don't think at any point in my life I'd ever saw myself in law enforcement, so to speak. But I had worked at Parliament with Bulelani Nyoka during the drafting of the Constitution and then in the National Council of Provinces. And when he was deployed in 1998, or appointed, I should say, as our first National Director of Public Prosecution, he asked me to join him. I was aware that the Scorpions, as they were known then, the Director of Special Operations, was one of the things that he would have to be busy with, apart from establishing our first National Prosecuting Authority. Frankly, I did hesitate for a while, but I had worked so well with Bulelani that in the end I decided that it was worth taking up the offer, and not I certainly didn't regret it. It was a bit of a crazy ride. We all know what happened to the Scorpion in the end. But I remain very proud of what Bulelani and his team were able to achieve.
Well, as a woman who has been right in the thick of the development of history, what would you say to young women today who are at the beginning of that, where they're looking at something going, this has got to change? What would you suggest?
I would just simply say that we do have a solid foundation in our country in the form of our constitution. We offer many things that need to be set right, but our democracy is proving, I think, to be a solid one, a stable one, despite many ups and downs. And if anything, I think shows that we need more people to become involved, more young people, more young women in government or outside of government. We need a very strong civil society. And whatever the disappointments and hardships that people are confronting, and there are many, I don't want to undermine the kind of difficulties that young women in particular, I have two young daughters myself, and I'm aware of the kind of difficulties that young women experience. But I would say, you know, just take heart from what has been achieved and use the rights that we have, the protection that our constitution and our democracy affords us, to fight for that. Because we haven't achieved the kind of society yet that the constitution envisages, but I believe that we are on the path to achieving that.
Marion Spark, thank you so much for being with us. I think the next step as well they need to take is to go and get your book, Guilty and Proud, an MK soldier's memoir of exile, prison and freedom. And they need to read that. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing just a drop in the ocean of this incredible journey that you've been on. We acknowledge your part in the history that is celebrated today.
Thank you, Roland. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Your digital library experience. Podcasts from algoafm.co.za.